to another episode of the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, a special episode featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network, and ESPN analyst Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Before we start, I want to thank you all for your continued support of this podcast and all of our pods here at Inside Lacrosse. We have a lot of fun trying to bring you engaging content in this fairly new format, and we love hearing from you. So give us a shout out on Twitter at Dixon Lacrosse or at D_fly, that's D_FLY, or you can drop me an email at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. Finally, if you like what you hear, please hit that subscribe button and share it with friends. We know you're going to love this one. Dixie, let's get it. All right, Dix, we got a special off-season podcast. After our podcast with PJ's Pub owner, Jerry Smith, I told Dix we need to do one of these every month in the off season, where we sit down with a very special guest, and we debated a lot of names, went back and forth. Of course, Dix made some hilarious jokes about who we should interview, and I had to tell him that we couldn't do those. But when he mentioned our guest today, the big man, I knew that that was going to be our next podcast. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome in our very special guest today, Coach Dick Adell.
Thanks, Dan.
And let me just go over a quick resume of this man. He's in the U.S. Lacrosse Hall of Fame. He's in the IMLCA, the Coaches Hall of Fame. He had a 282-123 record as a college coach at the University of Baltimore for 4 years, Army West Point for 7, and the University of Maryland for 18. He's in all of those Hall of Fames, and he will be soon inducted into the West Point Hall of Fame. He's been to 6 Final Fours as a coach. He shared outright 5 ACC regular season titles at Maryland, 1 ACC tournament title, 2-time USIL Coach of the Year, 3 times ACC Coach of the Year. It just keeps going on. So, Coach, thanks for inviting us over to your house to do this today.
Coach Adell, it's a pleasure to be with you, and I think this is the power of lacrosse. So to rewind a little bit, when I was a player at Johns Hopkins, there may not have been a coach or a team that I disliked more than the University of Maryland. You had your guys always foaming at the mouth. That flag bearer would run out, and then you guys would run out behind him or with him, and you were always the man in the middle making things happen. One thing that resonates with me is when you talk to your former players, Brian Reese, Dan Radebaugh. I can remember Brian Zeller playing on the back lot of Loyola High School after we had both graduated from college. And I said to him, Dick Adell, like, you guys really love him that much? Like, what's the deal? And Brian Zeller said, looked me dead in the eye, and he said, Coach Adell has changed my life. He's like a second father to me. What is, if there's a key or a secret, what is the key to those relationships with players like you had with your guys, not only at Maryland, but throughout the rest of your coaching career, which we'll touch on?
Gee, I don't know if it's a unique thing personally. I love people. I really do like being around people. And when I got into this profession early on, I determined that the one thing I would want to do is to treat my players the way I would want someone else to treat my son. And that coupled with the fact that I played at Towson a couple of honors, but I was not a great player by any means. And I always, the other maxim that I felt was important was that every player on the team was equal in my eyes. You know, the guy, the least talented kid, my God, he was out there going through what everybody else did every day, you know, and Saturday, he didn't get the minutes, you know, he didn't get the awards at the end of the year. He was there because he loved the sport, and he loved being a part of Calvert Hall, or Towson, or Maryland, or whatever. He loved being a part of the program. And I never wanted to lose sight of that fact. And those are sort of the maxims that I went by
Sure.
through my career.
And you come from really the ground up when you look at your coaching career. You started at Calvert Hall.
That's not exactly right. I started at Bear Creek Elementary School.
Whoever put this Wikipedia together is going to get it, because it didn't include Bear Creek, but go ahead.
I don't know how they could have been skipped. But I graduate Towson, and with my 2 months later, become wife, and the two of us take teaching jobs in Baltimore County. She's at Perry Hall, and I'm at beautiful downtown Bear Creek, and teaching first through sixth graders physical education. And that spring becomes the first year that you every college program has to have a freshman team. And if obviously, if you remember, you probably weren't born, for crying out loud. Dick Sazo leaves. My coach, my senior, leaves, becomes the head coach at Washington Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tigers hire Carmel to be the head football and head lacrosse coach. And so Carl, I applied for it, and I don't think it was a massive group applying for it. You know, he lets me have his freshman team. So I'm that first year, I'm at Bear Creek and coaching the freshman at Towson. And we got to that summer, which would be, I guess, the summer of 1968, and someone who had taught with my mother down in Dundalk, at Dundalk Junior High, and left and gone to become a faculty member at Calvert Hall, called Mom and said, the hall has a phys ed teaching position open and a coaching position in JV football. And I didn't know about the football side of it, because Dundalk High School in Towson didn't have football. You know, the only football we played was, you know, street ball, I guess. So outside of choosing my wife, that's the next major decision I had to make. You know, do I leave the shore thing at the county where I'll be tenured in another year, or go out to the hall? And we lived on Aberdeen Road, which is about five blocks from the hall. So it was really going to be convenient that way. And we said, what the hey? And so I go to the, actually, that's where you picked me up. But when I go to Calvert Hall in, what would that be, the 68-69 school year, mm-hmm. They have a lacrosse coach. And we get to the end of that year, which would be my second year with the Towson freshman, and our coach decides he wants to make more money. Svens King, a Loyola High School and Maryland grad, he wants to make more money than a teacher coach can make. And
he's a Loyola guy, so.
He's a Loyola guy. I had to throw that in there for your benefit. You know, the timing, just like the phone call the summer before, the timing is unbelievable. And, you know, I slipped right in there and would have 3 years with that group.
Yeah, including a 1972 team. You won two MSA championships there, but the 72 team, undefeated. And I know this in particular because my 1988 Loyola team was undefeated going into the championship game for the conference against Boys Latin, and we were reminded every single day, you guys have a chance to be the first undefeated MSA team since the 1972 Calvert Hall Cardinals. Unfortunately, we came up a little short that day against BL, and I don't think there was a perfect team until, mm-hmm. I want to say maybe 92, around, but maybe St. Paul's, one of those.
I think there was another
St. Either them or the 96 St. Mary's team with Danny Morrell. But that record stood for a really, really long time.
That was a good, Mark, that was a damn good team. And I would never be one to say it was the best. I don't think you can ever, but I would think that it would be in the discussion of the best teams that, you know, I think even we might have been better the year before when we lost to Loyola again. Mm-hmm. That team had Dougie Radebaugh on it.
Okay, yeah.
And of course, then we had Franz Wittelsberger and Dale Kohler and Mike Farrell, and us two Hall of Famers in Radebaugh and Farrell, and I think Franz will join that group pretty soon.
So you have tremendous success at Calvert Hall. Then you move over to the University of Baltimore. And during that time, you win a national championship, but it's not in the sport of lacrosse.
Yeah, I want to know about this.
What goes on at the Bumblebees of a UB?
The damnedest thing in my life, you know, what turned out to be a really sad moment. You know, Loch Raven High School opened up. It's going to open up in the fall of 72. And the principal, Brother Stephen, I think his name, announces that we're going to have a faculty cutback. You know, who gives a damn if faculty cutback? We're two-time champions. Mm-hmm. There's only two of us in the phys ed department. You know, I'm Fat City. Well, about March morning in the spring of 72, there's a knock on the door with Brother Stephen, and Brother asked my coworker, Snooky Bender, to take a walk. You know, I was, holy hell, I am about to lose my job.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm 28 years old. I think we're doing all the right things. You know, had just a great run with some great kids, and I'm jobless. And what, you know, what am I going to do? And, you know, I sort of looked around at insurance sales and things of that nature and said, man, I'm not ready to do that, you know. And BU said, Frank Simansky, and they're going to hire a lacrosse coach. So I went down to talk to him about it, and I have a meeting with the president at the time, Meb Turner, great man, University of Virginia wrestler in his day. And Meb said, we're thrilled, you know, you're going to be our lacrosse coach, but you're going to have to coach, you know, two sports.
And do you get to pick, or they tell you which two you're coaching?
I said, okay, Dr. Turner, you know, I played a little high school basketball. I didn't play very well.
Uh-huh.
You put that sheet of paper down, I could jump. You know,
slip it under your heels.
No, coach, you are going to be the head soccer coach. Hell, I look at him and say, Dr. Turner, do you know I've never played soccer? I've never coached soccer. And I said, the truth be told, I don't even like soccer.
You mean you didn't run out and buy some Beckenbauers and some really tight training pants?
Mark was just crazy. You know, Ian, don't worry about it. You know, you get him in condition, discipline, it's going to work itself out. So we our family, we go a week to the beach every summer. And I go to the library. Every book in the world is soccer, I throw it in my laundry bag.
Right.
You know? And we get down, and I put my fat ass down in one of the beach chairs on 105th Street to start learning soccer. And I opened that book up. What the hell have I agreed to do? This is crazy. And we come home, and I contact the Calvert Hall coach, the late Bill Karpovich. Would you talk with me a little bit, you know? And as fate would have it again, within about 3 blocks of my house, was the Patterson coach.
Wow.
And they were hell on wheels in soccer.
Oh, yeah.
His name was Joe Tiemens.
Yeah.
And these guys took me aside, helped me design practices. You know, they came over and evaluated when we scrimmaged.
Did you have to have a cigarette and a Coca-Cola with Coach Karp?
No. I'm going to tell you some Karp stories. So we are going to practice. We begin practice in the summer at 6 o'clock because the guys are all working. And I gather them under the tree over at Mount Washington in the shade. And I told him the truth, you know, that I think all of you guys know more about soccer than I will ever know and what I want to bring to the table. And we go out, and I think we won a pretty good practice thanks to Joe and Bill. But we finish and we're conditioned, and we get going a bit. And I said, now listen, this is for the fourth quarter. And you can hear him snickering. You know, there aren't any corners in soccer. You know, that dumbass. A second week. I mean, one of the few rules that I had with him, call me if you've got to miss practice. Well, I miss one of my kids for 2 days. Mm-hmm. I don't get a call. And I'm waiting out. Back. The fields were 7 miles from the school. And they parked the car, and I see him.
It's the old Spear Field?
The old
on Rogers Avenue.
Spear Chucker
sure.
Field.
There you go.
And Tim Nichols is coming up the driveway. And I'm, you know, getting a little bit fired up. You know, where the hell have you been? And as I'm doing that, he reaches in his shirt pocket and hands me a cigar. Hey, Skipper, you know, I'm a proud papa. I didn't have any father rules.
I just learned what a halfback and a striker is. Now I got to learn how
to. I'm not sure I knew that at that point. And damn if we don't. We might win 80 games.
Yeah.
We go to 3 Final Fours in November 22nd, 1975. We beat, I want to say, Wisconsin Green Bay or Seattle Pacific. And win the national championship.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Didn't know whether you blow the ball up or stuff it. I still may not know that.
Sure.
But it was an unbelievable experience.
At least you were honest with your players that you learned how to coach from a book. It wasn't until halfway through last spring that Dan told me he learned how to do podcasts by reading from a book. So at least you told your players up front. But Dan, I know you're interested in knowing.
Yeah, so what kind of lessons, you know, are transferable from the soccer field to the lacrosse field or from that experience of winning a championship and building a team up to that level could you take into your lacrosse coaching career?
I think it's very similar. You're molding the group, you know. I knew I couldn't teach you to juggle the ball 22 times, you know, or head in, but I could teach you how to be a better teammate, you know, to motivate you to try and get better every day in practice, you know, to care about your teammate. We had that. And these guys, the other advantage we had, whereas today you have a lot of foreign element in soccer, you were a foreigner on that team. If you weren't from Baltimore City, you know, if we had an Overly player and a Dunlop player, the majority of the guys are St. Joe Patterson, Calvert Hall,
cut their teeth at Patterson Park, Herring Run, places like that around the Baltimore
Absolutely.
Area. Yeah.
You know, and I learned for sure, though, that if you have, you know, good strawberries, it's easy to make a good strawberry pie, and I had plenty of good strawberries.
Sure,
you know, great kids, loyal to this day, you know, very much so.
So with all that success at Baltimore, why would you leave? Why would, but I'm being facetious.
It happened again.
Then you get a tap on the shoulder and you get a call from not only another institution, but a military academy.
This one was even, we are a private school. The University of Baltimore was a private school at that time. Mm-hmm. And they can't survive. Long term, they can't survive. So we're going to go in the state system. But the agreement is that we will only accept junior college transfers. And there was no chance for long term success in either one of the sports or. I mean, his favorite Abbott, after I left, Chip Silverman did it for a bit. Dino Madison's did it for a bit. Richie Mead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Benny Van, and maybe the most well-known player in UB history, Vinny Pfeiffer, the goaltender.
Yeah. And so I knew long-term that couldn't happen. And, you know, I had a chance to go to Navy to become the head soccer coach. And I
didn't have enough books.
I didn't want to pull those books out. And they offered Army, and I'm 32. And I didn't think it was right because I'd have to accept the coaching staff that existed because they're in the military. It doesn't cost the school anything. And so I'm not going to take it. And my wife said, okay, you don't take this. We're going to build our dream home up in Bel Air, and we'll live happily ever after. And I told, I'm not sure, 32, that I want to say, this is it, and I jumped to Army. And again, just another unique experience. When we're at the Hall, I'm a Protestant public school guy, and I'm far from the military type up there. But we, when I take the job, I am a phys ed teacher for the first year, and my assignment was 8 to 10, Monday through Saturday, and I'm not stuttering, okay, Saturday morning, 8 to 10, to teach wrestling. And I hate it. I hate it.
Sure.
I don't like wrestling to begin with. I don't want to be around a mat, and I don't want to be teaching on Saturday morning at 8 a.m. So at the end of the first year, the soccer coach retires. And the AD, a retired general, Ray Murphy, calls me in. You got to help us out. He said, in return for me getting you out of wrestling, I want you to take over soccer. We're putting all of our resources, all of our time. We're concerned about Army football, nothing else. Help me out. And it's plus the fact, we looked at your resume, we can't get anybody with a better record than you.
Yeah, you're a national champion.
Best coach available.
For God's sakes. So, 3 of the 7 years, I did both sports.
Wow.
And that, you have to have a great staff. Yeah. In fact, the turn, it helped me learn best how to manage your people, I couldn't be in two places at one time.
Sure.
We're in season soccer. My assistants are running across and vice versa.
Wow.
And in the wintertime, I've got one team on the second floor gym, the other team's on the fourth floor gym. My recruiting skills, I made them generic. So you didn't know if I was talking to you about
soccer or lacrosse.
But I know my kids, one of them went from 4 to 7, and I don't remember 5 and 6,
yeah.
But I loved it. And that led up to the most difficult decision I think I ever made in my life, and that was leaving them and coming to College Park.
Mm-hmm. Staying on the Army theme just for a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
When you got to Maryland, and we'll go into that, that's when you and your team really developed a reputation of very, very physical, very smash-mouth kind of lacrosse. Where did you pick that up? Was it at Army? Was it at UB? Was it back at the middle school?
It was definitely at West Point. We didn't have – we got better talent as we went along.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, we could play hard, and we had some – there was some rules jostling in there. We coached 1 year up there where there's no long pole limit. We rode with 9 poles once.
Yep.
One of the great scenes of all time, Mark. We could put the ball on the ground in a heartbeat. I got 9 BS athletes with a 6-foot pole in their sand, who are eating saltpeter in their food. These guys are and putting the ball on the ground.
Yeah.
No problem. Getting the ball off the ground and getting three of them off the field, major problem.
Right.
And then we had we were there at Army, we take the faceoff out.
Right.
A year where you get the ball.
And then you clear it.
No, you didn't clear it. That year you got into midline.
Oh, look, okay.
Because I can remember us when we were in a dire stress. You got the ball at the X at Homewood, and we double team you. We sort of left the goal open. It's not the easiest thing in the world to shoot from that X, sure. Getting ready to get speared by each side with a low ball on a grass field at what wasn't really a very nice grass field in those days.
Right.
But yeah, we had tough ass kids, aggressive kids.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then, their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job, better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within 1 day. That's 1 day. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Nobody loves free more than Mark Dixon. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. That's ZipRecruiter, one word, .com/lacrosse. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse.
So, Coach, you're coaching soccer once again and lacrosse at Army. You got a bunch of tough, rugged guys. What are some of your fondest memories and relationships that you built while up at West Point?
Well, one thing, Mark, the job led me to my best friend in life. And it described you just how intelligent a guy I am. One of the drawbacks in my mind to taking the position was the fact that I would have to take the existing coaching staff because they were both being paid by taxpayers' money. And I, you know, had always been in a position where I'd pick the people that I want to work with me. And then as it turned out, Dave Sofkowski became the brother that I didn't have. We worked together for 25 years, and the other inherited the system was Tommy Cafaro, probably as good an attackman that's ever played at Army, and he was really a plus because he lived it. You know, he answered any question, institutional question, you know, that you had, we're going to go back and see so many of those guys next weekend. We're talking.
As you get inducted into the Army Hall of Fame.
Almost 50 years later.
Wow. And what took them so long?
That's right. That's right. What the hell are they doing? I'll tell you a story, and I'm not name dropping.
Sure.
Because when I knew this guy, he had less money in his pocket than I did. Okay? But my office mate and the wall between the offices, you could talk like you and I right now with the wall still being there. That was Michael Krzyzewski.
No kidding.
True story. 1980. No, this was 1976.
You just put a huge smile on Danny Duke Blue Devil Flynn's face.
I'm a big fan.
He's going to leave there 4 years later. But he grabbed me, and we lived together. You know, it's like a loop. The houses were all in duplexes, hockey and basketball, and I'm swimming and lacrosse and so on. And Mike grabbed me, you know, Mike had been there 2 years before me, And he's probably, I think Mike's 70. He's a couple of years younger than I am. But he gave me the best advice I ever got at West Point. And when he said, when you see these guys in the afternoon, you know, they've been up since dark 30. They might have been boxing class. And so they're going to be like, they could look like beaten men. And he said, your first inclination is going to be to put an arm around them or take it easy on them. He says, you do that, you aren't going to be here very long. He said, you better be the voice, the best, the loudest voice that they hear. And the voice mellowed over time. And actually, you guys laugh about that. In 1980, March, we're on spring break at MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa. And I call back to school every day to see what's going on. And I call back and they said, Mike left. He said, just got a job. Oh, yeah, good for him. And, you know, he said, you know, where do you think he went? I said, let me guess a couple of them. Bilderberg, you know, Western Maryland. He was 9-18 that year. But a guy by the name of Bobby Knight got involved. Mm-hmm. And made it happen. And there are a lot of Mike Krzyzewski lovers out there. There are a lot of, you can't be a Mike Krzyzewski hater. You can be a Duke hater. Mike is a good, good person. You know, three girls, married to the same wife, got a dozen grandchildren. Gives a shit about his friends. Gives a hoot about his friends.
You're okay with that.
You know, and this is true. You know, 2 weeks ago, I get an email from him. You know, our first practice is the 30th. I'm not going to be able to get back, you know, but I want you to know I'll be thinking about you, mm-hmm. you know. And that's the kind of guy that he is. Super human being.
That's great.
But, Coach, you were saying that, you know, you inherited the coaching staff there, and it's where you met one of your lifelong friends there. Talk a little bit more about the coaching staff and the guys who have worked for you.
That's a great question, Dan. When I did the JV football at the Hall, I told you I hadn't played football. Mm-hmm. I thought I was useless. You know, I didn't have much responsibility. The head coach micromanaged. You know, and I really had a chance, you know, to just sort of observe. You know, I didn't ever want, first of all, I don't want to hire you if I don't think you're capable of doing the job. If you're capable of doing the job, then you do the job. You know, I can't be at both ends of the field at one time. You know, it used to bite my fanny wherever I was when somebody called, you know, for me and, you know, soft, I'm not here, soft could have answered it just as well.
Sure.
You get to know people.
So you've never been like that control freak,
no,
quote unquote.
You work with me. Mm-hmm. You never work for me.
Sure.
Hell, there were times that sometimes I think I work for them. You know, we did what we had to do, you know, to get it done. And I think that what I thought was a negative experience for me with the football helped me, you know, a great deal.
Sure.
And eat humble pie a little bit. I didn't invent the sport. You know, if we'd sit all day in the office to talk about things and argue over things. But the deal was, whether it was Dan's idea or Mark's idea or Dick's idea, whatever we came up with, we're all three supportive of that. And if there ever is a situation where we're not supportive, we'll be supportive in here mm-hmm. the next day, you know, and don't show. I had great people on every place I've been.
Sure.
You know, Freddie Kramer, Tommy McClellan. I can run Lou Sibitrice at the Hall. You know, George Barrett at BU. Wonderful coaches and remain, you know, lifelong friends.
Sure.
Coach, while we're on the subject of coaches, you were inducted last year into the IMLCA Hall of Fame.
Old People's Hall of Fame, Danny. That's all I feel.
But it was the inaugural class. It was the first time that the coaches put their own peers into the Hall of Fame. What did that mean to you to be inducted into the first class, but also to be recognized by your coaching peers in that way?
I got to be honest with you. When I started this, and you went to the convention, you were in the very last row. I'm looking up front there. It's Scotty. And it's humbling when you hang in that long, and you might be in the very first row now. Mm-hmm. Bob Scott was my idol. God. I wanted to be married to the same woman. 50 years, by the way, last month.
Congratulations.
A medal. I deserve a medal. She might deserve a hell of a lot more than that. To be a part of my kids' lives, the four kids, to be there with him, to be there with Richie, who I'd become close with her, to be there with Slayer. Jesus. And that group's far from full. It meant a lot to me. It means, I don't know if it's fair, it means even more to my family, to, my grandkids, my kids. They gave up. I thought they gave up a lot. A lot of their time went to 42 other guys, mm-hmm. But it seemed like whenever I wasn't there, I tell John Tillman this story. John's doing a hell of a job. Mm-hmm. He wins it, and I think we're going to win it again this year. But I sort of worry about you. That there's several times over the last 35 years where I've had a bad experience. Mm-hmm. And I've driven 28 miles home, walked in the door straight to the kitchen, pulled the kitchen drawer open, reached for the sharpest knife in the drawer. Mm-hmm. And my wife slammed the door shut. And I said, who's going to slam the door shut on you? That's been a godsend, to have a wife that understood what I was doing, and how we were trying to do it, to have a best friend mm-hmm. who's working with you every day. Don't play this before next Friday or my speech is screwed. up at West Point. But I think it's a village that helped me succeed.
Sure.
And I'm going to make sure everybody knows who that village is.
Great.
Or was.
Excellent. Yeah. The 2004 National Hall of Fame induction, how would you compare that honor to the 2016 IMLCA induction? I mean, they're both tremendous Hall of Fames, but one comes obviously a few years earlier and a few years after you stopped coaching.
I certainly had a lot more time. Everything happened after I stopped, where you had time to think about it. When you're coaching, Mark, even the season ends, what's recruiting?
It doesn't end, really.
It's a phone call, mm-hmm. And if I don't make the call, Dan's doing it. Oh, God. If Dan gets up early to do it, I better get up a little earlier than Dan. And if you snooze, you lose. Mm-hmm. I think we have that paranoia about us. And we went at it as hard as we could go for as long as I could go. And I know I told the kids this many a time. I want to ask you to do something to do something that I can't do, and at the end I couldn't do it. But the honors, we were together with Calvert Hall, guys, 45 years ago, and it's hard. It's like, what's your favorite team, or who's your favorite player? Mm-hmm. That's so hard. That's almost impossible.
Sure,
they're just neat. I think it's neat that somebody gives a damn mm-hmm. about you.
Yeah.
I will tell you this, at $150 a pop for the banquet at West Point, I'm about tapped out. I hope this doesn't last long. You know, or I'll be calling you for a loan.
Sure. Well, at least it's not like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame where it's, what, like 10 grand a table or something that. So,
Don't call me.
So your time at West Point, obviously a good time in your life. You met some tremendous people, including Coach Slafkovsky. How does your next stop come about? The trip back home to Maryland in College Park.
Kevin O'Leary calls me.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin is on
former
this
goaltender at University of Maryland.
At that time, he's a junior goaltender.
Wow! So he's a current player.
He's going to have another year.
No violation there.
No violation.
He's player calling the coach.
He's a member of the. He's a student member of the selection committee.
Sure.
You know, would you be interested to talk to Maryland about the job? The hell no. You know, we'd just been 3 years in a row in the quarters.
Mm-hmm.
My campus sold out. You know, I could put two fannies in a receipt for granted.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of advantages of there, free housing, you know, a lot of things to like. But then I thought, they'd failed. I loved one of our kid that we brought in, African-American kid, who needed West Point, and they failed him out. Whereas if they just slowed it down a little bit, I think we could have gotten him through.
Mm-hmm.
And my feelings were hurt. And at that time, 83, I don't say this egotistically, but we were one of the few things Army athletics had going for it then.
Sure.
You know, we've been a succession of bad football seasons. Mike was gone. You know, that wasn't, that was heading in a bad direction.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, have him call me. And then they call, and Army thinks I might leave. Maybe I didn't need more money or more lengthy contract. I want a little more.
A little more oomph.
Yeah, something like that happened the next time. So they make the call, and the AD calls me up and said, they'd like to talk to you, but we want to speak with you before,
mm-hmm.
you know, any
decision. And leading up to this, as a lacrosse coach, did you ever have an idea of a dream job? Was there ever an end job for Dick Adell? Like, if I could get to the University of X, this would be it.
It was the athletic director at Washington College.
Gotcha.
That's where I wanted to end up. That was my ultimate goal.
Gotcha.
So I leave his office. I call Kevin. In fact, I go home. My home is probably 200 yards from the office. I could slit on my ass and been there in a minute. But I'm afraid the phones might be tapped. You know, government lines. I call Kevin. I said it worked. Tell him thanks, but no thanks. You know,
so you got what you wanted out of West Point.
Oh, man, you can't do that. You know, come down here. You know, have dinner with your mother. You know, and go back and tell me you're not interested in it. So I come down, and they ask what I'd like to see. And I'm a Dundalk. Other than the 7 years, of the 73 years, seven of them are up there. Everything else is right here.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I want to meet Bobby Ross. I've never been around.
Then head football coach.
And he's on the rise. And above all else, I need to meet Charles G. Lefty Drizzell.
There you go.
And if I get to do that, I come in, and when I get in, the first guy I meet is the best quarterback they ever had.
Boomer.
Go back. Boomer's playing. This is Jack Scarbath.
Really? Okay.
I played in the Sugar Bowl quarterback. Spend the day here. Came down, and Dick Dole was the AD. And Dick, at the end of the day, coach, we want you to be our coach. What would it take for you to come here? And I said, hey, I didn't come here looking for a job, you know. But there's some things that really entice me.
Came there to meet Bobby Ross, left your Drizzell.
So I turn around and go home.
Dinner with your mom.
As I leave, you go home. I swear to God, this is just true. You go home and you sit down with your wife and you decide what would it take, you know. So you're home, back to the point. and I might make 60 calls, 60 telephone calls to everybody I know. Hey, Dan, what do you think? Take it. You know, hey, Mark, what do you think? Stay.
I mean, oh, geez. So it's one of those 50-50s.
Dr. Engelhardt, you know, my advisor, you know, it's like 30-30. Meanwhile, I'm about to have a nurse right now. You know, you love your kids. You do, particularly up there, you're a major part of their life. They can't get home, you know. So what am I going to do? And turns out to shorten it up a little bit. Let's go down and ask for the world. And they're not going to give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
We come back here and ride the horse the rest of the way.
Sure.
They gave it to me.
Wow.
Unheard of at that time. And the other factor to enter in, my dad had died 2 months after we beat St. Paul's to win the championship in 71.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was 48, widowed, and I knew what it would mean to her to have her boy back.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe more importantly, her grandkids.
Sure, sure.
And that's how, it was a lark, basically, that turned into a fun 18 years.
Sure.
It really did.
Yeah.
Bar one ride to work in July of 1986, as I'm going down 95, we interrupt this broadcast to tell you there's a number two draft choice in the NBA draft has just died of a drug overdose.
Mm-hmm.
And that, getting through that, they rocked the school and the athletic department to its to its foundation.
I've actually got that written down as something to ask you. So you get to Maryland in 84, and you have your first couple of seasons, and then 86 is when Len Bias dies.
Summer.
June of 1986,
yes, sir.
2 days, 3 days after the NBA draft. Yep. What was that like? What was that? You just described hearing it on the radio, but what was the aftermath there?
Horrible.
Basically the fall of Maryland basketball.
It was almost the fall of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Every day for like 3 months, something negative is written in the paper. Every day. It was like, close your shades. You know, don't answer a knock on the door. It taught us. I have a team that is my favorite, but they're my favorite for just a special reason. And that's the 87 guys,
mm-hmm.
the 87 team. I mean, oh, hell, the bombs are going off around them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bobby quits. The lefties pushed out.
Mm-hmm.
Dick quits. The chancellor quits. Everybody leaves. And secretaries lose their job because the revenue drops. And these guys played their friggin' gazombies off
mm-hmm.
for me. And we're undefeated. 87, that's the year that we break the streak with Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
The irony of that is we help Hopkins find a solution because he pulled the goalie. I'm trying to remember what his name was.
The goalie was Stuart Jones.
Stuart Jones.
Stuart Jones was the starter.
And he put in a freshman from Lindbrook High School.
Right.
Who would play the next 3.5 years in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And that team wins them all, beats Tony at our place in the quarters and goes up and gets upset in the semis. And I won't put this right. We deserved it. I thought, God, if anybody had a cause, it would be these kids. And then when I talked to Scotty shortly thereafter, their loved, beloved assistant coach,
Freddie Smith,
was dying.
Yeah.
It would be the last game. He couldn't even, he didn't have enough strength to get back on the sideline
right.
for the championship game. So, you know, maybe their need it was a little bit more than ours. Mark, I'm an emotional guy.
Mm-hmm.
I cried at the end of it. Not that I'm not going to win the damn trophy. What's a trophy mean? You know.
What those guys went through.
And you look around that room. I black, you know, the tears going, and we realize all of a sudden we're never going to be together again. you know. That if yes, the one reason I would have loved to win the title was to get the 25-year deal.
Yeah.
You know, where you'd be reunited.
Yeah.
I thought, God, emotionally shattering moment.
Was that the most disappointing moment in your athletic coaching career? That 87 experience?
I don't think anything else comes close to it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. No. No. Jazz. Mike Moscow, Hanley, Thurston, Beardmore, Jackson, were still great kids.
Yeah.
Said great kids. They're men, for God's sakes. What the hell am I saying?
Sure. Well, they'll always be your kids, yeah, though. Yeah. You know, your players. When Maryland was able to, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but when Maryland wins a championship this year, 2017, 30 years after the 87, did you think about those 87 guys? Or were you more...
I thought about it every year, you know.
Gotcha.
You know, from number one through number 42 year, you know, it just keeps coming up. I mean, bury it, man. I want to bury it. Win the game. You know, I don't want those kids to be known. That's one of the guys that couldn't do it. It was our turn, and
sure,
well overdue.
We hope you enjoyed part one of our conversation with legendary coach Dick Adell. Dixie and I will be back next week with part two, where we resume the conversation and hear some more great stories from the big man.